out there now, so it's impossible to make everybody happy, and I've kind of learned to live with that. But to be completely honest with you, also, like, we've been fortunate enough that, like, every single record that we've put out has brought in more people and has become, you know, we have our, like, higher power people who are, like, they want to hear just, like, the fast, crazy stuff, which is super fun to play. We have the master volume people that want to hear, you know, that material, which I obviously still love as well. But, like, last fall when we went out and did, like, 2 months behind Fuck Art, most people just wanted to hear Fuck Art. And so we were, you know, not that we didn't adjust the set list accordingly, but I was kind of, we hadn't really played that material before we recorded it. So I didn't really know what people were going to, how they were going to respond to it. But most of the people in the crowds at those shows, Fuck Art was their entry point. So
sure.
We haven't quite hit that point yet where people are like, I just wish they played more of that last album. Like, I'm sure that day will come, but we haven't quite hit it yet, which is lovely.
Well, it sounds like you have as you just said, you know, gaining more artists in or gaining more fans at an entry point on a certain album helps the draw, that sort of thing. But I was also just thinking, what kind of set, like how long of a set does the Dirty Nil do? Because you got a lot to draw from, you know, is it good for you guys to go out and do? Because there was always a thing about with pop punk, those sort of things, less is more. Well, we're only going to give them a 45-minute set. Well, then things change. We're going to give them an hour set. Well, we'll give them an hour and 15, a solid set, plus two encore songs, that sort of thing. Or do you guys just do a straight 90 and watch everyone just sweat to death?
I mean, we kind of always are changing how we're doing it, but I'm kind of in the mentality of the give them, like, you know, 45 to an hour of just, like, and, like, you know, and rip through it. And, like, because, you know, and when we play, like, a big, you know, hometowner or something, then, like, you know, I think we kind of relax that idea a little bit. But in general, you know, I subscribe to the Johnny Ramone philosophy on things, where he said, you know, he saw the Beatles play for 25 minutes at Shea Stadium. You know, hit them with your best stuff and get the hell off there. Like, I also don't want to, like, make people feel like they've been cheated out of their ticket money, of course, but, like, we're definitely not, like, we're not playing, like, marathon Springsteen sets, and we're really loud, and we have a lot of intense material. There's not a whole lot of balladry in there, or there's not an acoustic portion of the set. It's like, I think that I like to give people a reason to come back the next time. And, you know, it's there was a part of me, there's a point in time where I was like, well, we have to play all of these songs. Like, and then now there's just so much material that it's like, okay, well, we can't possibly physically play all this material that people want to hear. And we get messages or people yelling at us, you didn't play this song. It's like, yeah, I know, because we literally can't play it all. It's one of those good problems to have, but we try and accommodate people. Like, we'll tweet out, like, what do you guys want to hear tonight? We'll try and accommodate you, but we switch it up every night a bit. So, I think rock and roll is best in, like, you know, a furious blitz, and then, like, a complete just, like, explosion and ending. That's where my head's at. I'm not a huge fan of super long self-indulgent sets personally.
So that means no encore.
Depends. I mean, like, we kind of go through different, like, I think we have a bit of a sarcastic relationship with the encore. We don't really like doing it as a method of course, like, or as like a,
it seems like, forced. It,
yeah,
does.
I don't like that. No,
it does. And everyone's done it over the years. Even our pals, the Killjoys, have done it. And they always went, are we really doing this? Can we not just, you know, just not do the encore? But everyone was always cheering for that big cover song that they did, you know, like, whatever it is that they did, Dreamin', you know, the song Dreamin' from Blondie or like whatever. And then everyone could would still be going crazy at the end of the night and they would do that. But I just got an article sent to me recently from a friend and it was just like, encores are out in this generation. This generation musician doesn't really want to do an encore anymore. And I'm like, well, that's pretty valid.
Well, I prefer to just say, hey, listen, this is like, this has been fun. We've got like two or three left for you and that's it. So here you go.
Merch tables in the back.
Yeah. Tip your bartender. I completely agree that like when it feels like, as I said, just like a, like it, when it feels forced and there's like, it's just, and I think a better, as I said, I like to just try and strike the balance if we can of like playing a full set for sure. But all of our songs are 2.5 minutes. So it's not,
it's a lot of music.
It is a lot. Like our songs are shorter than almost like any other band you'll talk to on average. Like they're, our long extended songs are like 4 minutes. so we're not fucking around with our arrangements. We're lean and mean. We're the first internet generation. We don't have time for jamming and filler and that. It's just don't bore us, get to the chorus.
That's the attention span, and I think you just nailed it right there. Where like there's just too much going on. There's too much going on to keep to hold your attention. You know, now we're inundated with TikTok for some time now. We have all this social media. We have lights. We have sounds. How the hell are you supposed to hold my attention for more than what it is at this moment? You know.
Yeah, and every band is different, and like, but I just like I don't. Aside from like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, I just don't have any patience or reverence for like jam music or anything of that ilk. Like I've never been able to, like, I love the iconography, but I don't like the Grateful Dead at all. And I will never pretend that I do or anything like that, because like, it's like, who's got time for the great, like in the time that I could listen to one Grateful Dead song, I could listen to like, I don't know, 5 sick power pop tunes or like, I don't know. It's what you like. And I think that like what I got to, when I was younger and I heard like a song that worked, that was really short, but it worked for some reason. And it was like half the length of a traditional song, like, My United States of Whatever by Liam Lynch or anything from Guided by Voices, where like, I don't know why this works, but it's so short. Why do songs have to be so long? I think that there's definitely a voice in the back of my head every time, like, how short can we make this and still make it have as the maximum power as possible. I think that I'm always kind of being pushed back against of like cutting things out. They're like, no, this part's great. Don't cut it out. And I'm like, okay, we'll keep it in for now. But
I think you would actually be a great record rep for editing songs for radio. Cause radio is like, give me that. Like you just said, give me the guts right now. Like give me that chorus right off. Give me 5 seconds of the chorus, even before you hit the guitar. And it's like, just give me, and keep it under. If you can do this in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, God love you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, everybody's different, but I definitely have a tendency towards like super short, concentrated arrangements. It usually takes a panel consensus to override that in me.
Let me time. We'll be right back.
I mean, we all need a gatekeeper. We say we don't. Billy Corgan for years says, I don't need a gatekeeper. And then his own band and his management made him go to therapy and said, you cannot control every aspect of what we're doing here. It's just maddening. Who are your trusted gatekeepers for the Dirty Nil when you want to put a song out or bounce an idea off of?
Well, we've got, I mean, I definitely always talk to, I mean, principally it's Kyle, and then and then, you know, whoever else we've played with, I definitely value anybody else that's taking part in the song's opinion. You know, I think that, if something's too short or too long, like, you can hear it, like, and it's not every song's different too. But I definitely have like my friends, like Adam Bentley, who have been working with the band for like 11 years, whose opinion I weigh quite heavily. And then other friends, like I have other friends that have the same job as me writing songs, and I shoot things over to them, or I go up and play guitars together and show them something I'm working on. They show me something they're working on. I'm definitely not opposed to changing my thinking on things. And sometimes I can recognize when I'm in a state where my thinking isn't right on things, and that I am leaning a bit more heavily on outside opinion because I'm a little lost in the sauce because I've worked with something for too long, and I'm like, okay, what do you think about this? Sometimes I am a religious zealot where I'm like, no, it has to be this way. Like, this is how it goes. But I'm definitely more the former. I'm definitely very, I want everyone to be as stoked as possible.
Again, pushing forward, moving forward in a positive vibe of being creative about something is making sure that it's in a positive light at all times for you.
As much as possible. I mean, like when you have when you have any kind of group work, there's going to be creative tensions.
I hate group work. What an awful thing to say. I hate group work.
It has its days, man, where it moves a little slower than you maybe think it could. But yeah. In general, I've found the way to kind of to get the most out of group work is that like when we play and when we work on things, I've done my work and I've done my homework and I'm bringing in some fire ass songs to work on rather than like looking at everybody like, what do you think of this chord? You know, it's like, okay, well I got this one. Okay. This one, we're getting to a bit of a brick wall on this one. We're slowing down on this. So let's just let's put this one on the back burner, let it simmer.
Right.
And let's take out this one and work on this one. Rather than having, okay, I have one new song. Let's work on that until we hate each other.
I was just going to bring that up because when you got this idea, this rough outline, are you saying, I mean, you have this great relationship, but you just said with Kyle of like, okay, well, I know he's drums like this and I know I can write a song around this. There's this energy, that sort of thing. But do you, when you come into a song and you're sitting in the recording studio, are you saying, I hear the drums like this, I hear the bass going this way, and then you wait for people just to change it to show you another way?
I usually try and just say, well, like, I think that the best way to do it is like, okay, well, I'll bring in, like, I'll write the song and we will work on the arrangement together. And that means you find your place within it. And that means sometimes that the song changes.
Yeah.
But, I like to typically, I mean, like one of the biggest lessons I've learned in this industry, and I'm sure it's the same in any industry, is like work with people who you like what they do rather than like, you know, like so that you like you don't want to micromanage people in anything. Like when it comes to when we work with visual artists or anything, like the less that you have to like get down into the weeds on things, the better. And the older I get, the more like I think accepting and embracing I am of like other flavors that I don't necessarily, that wouldn't necessarily be my primary choice.
Right.
I think that the older I get, the more I celebrate different flavors.
Yeah.
Hey, before we talk about the single that you just put together with the Dirty Nil that's out now, I want to just jump off topic. I want to talk about two things. What kind of dog do you have? I see this dog with you, and I laugh every time when I see you with this dog because you're a dog lover. I see more photos of you and this dog than I see of the band.
Big dog guy. Yeah. He's a half Australian cattle dog and then half like every other breed.
Is he? So yeah. Mongrel.
His mom was a purebred and his dad was a wild animal. So right. He's like,
what's the name of the dog?
Leo.
Leo. How long have you had Leo for?
He's 4 years old. We've had him for like 3 years. He's rescued.
Good looking dog.
Good boy.
Good. Big love shout him. Out to Leo, man. From
big
Gunner.
Shout out. He's
Second thing is that you and I got to meet one of the coolest people that, you know, I think, and I couldn't even talk to him this time. Tommy Stinson a couple weeks ago at the Casbah, and you have this great photo with Tommy Stinson, and I'm so jealous of it. And here's a quick story why. Years ago, I was DJing at This Ain't Hollywood. Tommy Stinson comes into play. Mike and Pete ended up from the Jellyfish. Doughboys. They ended up doing I don't know if you might have been at the show. They were doing an opening set, and then Tommy Stinson came up on stage. Lou, being the most gracious host that he is, he hauls me in to the back room and he goes, Tommy, this is Jamie Gunner Smith, big fan, blah blah blah, there's a DJ, and he looks at me, smiles, he's very gracious, and he says, nice music you're playing, because my whole set list that night was okay, music that relates to Tommy Stinson, who influenced him. Like, I went on this rabbit hole of research, right? And I got all fanboy and I wanted like everybody in the room, they don't care. Right. You know this. They don't care. But in my mind, I've built a set list of music that night that will make the night extra special. So I go and I start talking to him. Luke, God is my witness. I turned into that person you don't want to talk to, you know, where it's just like, I don't have the energy to talk to this gweeb. And I just started talking and my mouth wouldn't stop, Luke. And I'm like going, hey, you know, I was a big fan of the Replacements, and my friend Mike Troublecock actually introduced me to the Replacements back in the early 90s. And but well before that, I remember hearing about the band on blah, 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 on CFNY and Alan Cross. Blah, 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 blah. But then again, you know, your band never really broke and it became a cult-like status. And I couldn't stop talking. And his face went from like so happy to see me to like, you know, yeah. It just dropped. And then at the end of it, I'm like going, oh, God, I turned into that person. And I just kind of like walked away, got out of the conversation, and I stood over in the corner. I was just like, I just embarrassed myself in front of Tommy Stinson. So now I'm thinking I'm going to go to the show and I'm going, hey, Tommy, you know, great, blah, 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 great set. You know, I bought a shirt. Can you sign it? And I just chickened out because I didn't want to turn into the goof, you know, the annoying goof. And then I see on the internet, there's you with this shit-eating grin, you know, standing next to me like, hey! And I'm like, son of a bitch. Did he say anything to you?
Well, two things. Number one,
lie to me. Make up a huge story. Go ahead.
What we call what we call that in the biz is being a punisher. And everybody's been a punisher. I've been a punisher. No, I definitely punished Tommy Stinson. No,
I did the same shit, dude.
Don't worry. Man.
I feel
but
so
it's
bad.
Impossible not to, like, when you meet, like, I don't know, it's like when I met Pete Townsend, I was just like, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, it's not,
I
love these people, right? Like, I fell in love with the mythology just like you did, and, you know, we're not casual fans. It's not.
No, we're not. This is ingrained in us. We grew up on this shit, and we're like,
I left with the same feeling of shame. It's part of the, it's how rock and roll works, dude.
I'm gonna have to use the Punisher line from now on.
I think it captures it very well.
I think it, you wait on December 10th. I'm going to like have a lineup of Punishers ready to bring backstage just to crush your spirits.
Listen, Punishers make this industry work. So we gotta appreciate the Punishers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. And I'm kind of feel better that both of us are in the same category.
No, I was a screaming Beatles fan. Yeah.
Same thing. I had a Punisher moment years ago in the early 90s. I was at the Horseshoe and Yvonne Matzel introduced me to this guy named John. And we were talking about music and all this other stuff. And he started referencing things. And I'm like, well, that's a bit before my time. And then and then he said his last name, where he was from. And I went, and then Yvonne said, Jamie, you idiot. This is John Entwistle from The Who. And it was the guy from The Who. Yeah. And yeah. So I went from, I don't think I was being a Punisher, but I was kind of like looking at him like going, what? How did that happen? Like, where did I not, you know, like this guy's like, this is the guy from The Who, you know? So
yeah,
I didn't turn around and go, I need you to sign this. And yeah, on this album, when you guys put out the mono version of it, and then there was a backing vocals take, but the guy cut it out, but then Pete screamed, you needed it back in. I didn't do any of those things. I was just still standing there going, standing next to John Entwistle. And he's talking to me like, everything's casual, telling me stories, you know, like that's an amazing thing. All right, awesome. We better get off this fanboy crap and let's just get ready to the single. Bye Bye Big Bear. And I listened to the song and it has all the Dirty Nil flavors to it. You know, there's some sarcasm, there's some riffs. It's all there. How long did it take you to put this together? And is this just a pre-single to an EP or coming out or an actual album?
No, it's a standalone. It's just something we were all living together in a house in downtown Hamilton. We lived there for like 5 years. And we had a bunch of, you know, awesome musicians living with us over the years. We had Ian from Attack in Black. We had Brett, the singer of the Glorious Sons, and we had our friend Patrick from the band Seaway was living there. So, I mean, we just had this kind of rotating crew of different musicians, and we just had such a good damn time down there. But, I mean, it was also, we saw some, I mean, some, we definitely did some living and saw some crazy stuff in the neighborhood around the house. And when we turned 30, which was in 2020, we decided, okay, well, I guess it's time to kind of graduate to the next part of our life, chapter of our personal sure. lives, whatever that's going to be. And so I wrote that song, and it was actually the first song to dovetail, it was the first song that I had used to write using GarageBand since I was like 17. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, I rediscovered GarageBand over the pandemic. It was 2 years. Yeah.
You know, and you guys were working like being creative at that time as well, because I remember actually seeing you personally doing the Zoom interviews with different people, your friends.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was a good way to keep sharp, that sort of thing, and keep being creative and interested in what you're supposed to be doing. So good
for
on
sure.
You know, December 10th, Bridgeworks solo acoustic. Luke is opening up for the Killjoys.
I think it's solo electric.
Okay. Well, that was good. That's where I was going to go with the question, electric or acoustic.
Yeah. I have an acoustic and I love playing it, but
gets lost in a room of 500 people if they're talking.
Yeah, I just like, I don't know. I am an electric guitar player. I enjoy playing acoustic sometimes for sure. And it's fun, like, especially kind of like working things out or, you know, warming up your voice before the show, doing harmonies and stuff. But in terms of actually like performing, like, I just find like the electric guitar is so much more fun than the acoustic guitar. It's like, there's no contest. It's like, yeah. I don't need to play the Amish guitar for you.
No,
it's 2022.
Yeah.
We've got electricity. So,
hey, yeah. And some things translate, when they're acoustic, they can be very powerful, but, if you're good with the electric and it sounds better, and Bridgeworks is a big room too.
Well, you know? Subtlety's never been my strong suit. So
play to your strengths, kid.
Yeah.
Be a power forward on the wing. If that's what you're going to be, play to your strengths, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time, having this chit chat with us. And I look forward to hanging out with you on December 10th at Bridgeworks. And I'll make sure that we have I will personally go through the crowd and find the Punishers to come back and
round them up.
I'll round them up and we'll get them all standing in front of Gene and watch Gene just go, oh my God, what are you doing to me here? Come on.
I love it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. Hey, this is Luke from the Dirty Nil, and this is our new single, Bye Bye Big Bear. If I just could say my piece, wouldn't that be nice? If I had some clarity, wouldn't that suffice? Baby, it's been coming for a long time, and it's the right time.
Special thanks to Luke for doing the pre-recorded Zoom chat. We talked forever, man. That was a lot of fun. Check out Luke doing the opening solo with his electric guitar for the Killjoys on December 10th, 2022 at Bridgeworks here in Hamilton, Ontario. Hit up Bridgeworks for more ticket information and grab yourself a ticket. It should be a lot of fun. Now I got to go make some t-shirts. I got to make a t-shirt for Luke with a picture of me that says Punisher on it, or maybe like Welcome to the Punisher. And I'm going to picture of his face and I'm going to put it on a shirt and I'm going to go Welcome to the Punisher and I'm going to wear it because it's going to be great. Because now I know there's two of us out there that just punish musicians with our enthusiasm and stupid questions and glee. Thank you, Luke, for being a part of it. TheDirtyNail.com. Check out more information there.
Steel City Music.
This is CIOI, Hamilton's home for alternative. Indie 101.5 FM.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
I wrote a song the day you left to California. Why you
track's called California. The artist is I Was King out of Egersund, Norway. Hey, you're hanging out with Gunnar here on Steel City Music. And in this hour, it's all about falling down the rabbit hole. Yes, falling down the rabbit hole, clicking on one thing, leading it to another, and then just blissfully listening to music on your computer. Yeah, that's what I do. And this is what the hour of music is going to be. So there you go. Let's see. Let's get to the old housekeeping thing. SteelCityMusic.ca is on the web. The old website's up. It's running. If you got to get a hold of me, there's a contact form there. Click on it. Gunnar, hey, I got music, this, that, blah, blah, blah. There you go. And I'm like, okay. And I'll respond and we'll be like, blah, blah, blah. This is fun. We're blah, blah, blah. And I can't believe how much we're blah, blah, blah. And there you go. Yeah, and on the social media, SCM Graham on Insta and Facebook, of course, is the Steel City Music